Le pied d'appui. Ne chantez pas. Om Padram Karne Pish. Om Padram Karne Pish. Shrinuyamadevaha. Shrinuyamadevaha. Padram Pashe Makshabhir. Padram Pashe Makshabhir. Yajatraha. Yajatraha. Stirairangai. Stirairangai. Stushtuvagum sastanubihi. Stushtuvagum sastanubihi. Yashema devahitang. Yashema devahitang. Yadayuhu. Swastina Indro.
Swastina Indro.
Vrittashravaha.
Swastina
Pusha.
Swastina Pusha.
Vishwavedaha.
Vishwavedaha.
Swastina Starksho.
Swastina Starksho.
Arishtanemihi.
Arishtanemihi.
Swastino Brahaspatir Tathatu.
Swastino Brahaspatir Tathatu.
Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Om Brahma Devanam.
Om Brahma Devanam.
Katamap Sambhava. Pratamasambhava Vishwasya Karta
Vishwasya Karta
Bhuvanasya Gota
Bhuvanasya Gota
Sabrahma Vidyam
Sabrahma Vidyam
Sarva Vidya Pratishtam
Sarva Vidya Pratishtam
Atharvaya
Atharvaya
Jeshtaputraya
Praha.
Okay. So we began with this one last week. Om Brahma. Brahma here means Brahmaji. Here, the word Brahma, we're used to Brahman. Nirnam Brahman. Brahman means the Atma, that which is infinite, the Satchitananda Atma, which is the absolute reality. Brahma can also mean, in the Vedas, it's also used to mean Veda, the Vedas. It's also used in the masculine as Brahma, which is masculine nominative singular, Brahmaji. Brahmaji is part of the Trinity, Brahma, Vishnu, in Shiva, where Brahma is viewed as the first manifestation of Ishvara. So if we take Brahman, that which is the Atma, the limitless self, Satchitananda, that Brahman plus Maya, in its first manifestation, means coming into being, the creation coming into being, that Ishvara is called Brahmaji, the creator. So when the creation first comes into being, that process of coming into being, we look at that as the creation or the first manifestation. We call that first manifestation of Ishvara Brahmaji, Brahma. When Ishvara is manifest and the creation is being sustained, then Ishvara gets the name of Vishnu, that which is sustaining, that which is all-pervasive. When the creation resolves, because the creation is viewed shastrically to be cyclical, the creation endlessly from beginningless time will present, will come into creation, will come into manifestation, that's Brahma, then Ishvara is viewed as Brahma, Brahmaji. It's sustained for the whole period of time that it's lasting, that it's manifest. At that time, Ishvara is called Vishnu. And then when the creation resolves, it's called Shiva or Rudra. There are different names mean the same thing. I mean, Shiva is Rudra. And it has to do with dissolution. When the creation is manifest, then within that manifest condition, then there are many aspects within Ishvara that then are given different names, different capacities. Like, for instance, Varuna is the lord of the waters. Vayu is the lord of the wind. Indra is the overall lord of all the activities and lightning and this type of thing. So there are many, many different names for different particular manifestations of Ishvara. But when we look at Ishvara in terms of the whole, the manifestation of the whole, is that active manifestation we call Brahma, Brahmaji. The maintenance, the sustenance of the whole. Then Ishvara we call as Vishnu. In the resolution we call as Shiva. So these are all names for one Ishvara. It's not like there's Ishvara and then there's Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. It's not that. It's that there is Ishvara, one Ishvara, and then these are looking at Ishvara from different capacities, as the creator, as the sustainer, as the one who resolves the creation. But still all one Ishvara. Now, when Ishvara is there, the whole manifestation is there, still, if we give names to different powers or different capacities within the creation, different devatas, you know, devatas are names for capacities within the creation. It's still one Ishvara. This devata is a part of Ishvara, as are you, as are you, as are you. Everything is a part of Ishvara. There's nothing that's separate from Ishvara. So there's only one Ishvara if you're looking at Ishvara from the whole, as the whole, and then looking at it in terms of the projection, sustenance, and dissolution, we have these names, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. If you're looking at the entire manifestation and then the different parts and capacities within the manifestation, then you have the myriad of devatas that will be responsible or an embodiment, personification, or an acknowledging in prayer, and evoking in prayer, these different capacities. You might invoke Ishvara's compassion or Ishvara's strength or Ishvara's capacity in any given particular regard because you want something specific. You want a specific help. And so you pray to Ishvara in that specific capacity of Ishvara you're praying to and asking for blessings in that particular area. So now here in this verse, Brahma, so Brahmaji, Devanam Pratamaha Babhuva, Sambhabhuva. Brahmaji was the first, was born, created. Okay, Brahma was created first, Pratamaha, the first among the Devas. Devanam, right, Brahma, Devanam, among the Devas, Pratamaha, the first. So Brahma, who was the first among the Devas, Sambhabhuva, came into being. Okay. So now, Devanam Pratamaha, the first among the Devas. First can be in terms of quality, preeminence. The one strongest, strongest in terms of knowledge, in terms of dispassion, in terms of vairagya, in terms of wealth, in terms of yashas, in terms of praise, all of the different meanings of Bhagavan. So Brahmaji can be looked at as first in the sense of the most exalted, first in terms of quality, because Brahmaji is the whole, right? So there is no one or nothing greater than that because Brahmaji is the whole. Right? So no devata or no particular thing is going to be greater than the one who is the whole, right? Because the whole includes all of the parts, right? And all of the gunas or all of the qualities of all of the parts. So preeminent, pratamaha is in that way. But also Pratamaha, which means first among all of the gods, Brahmaji is the first manifestation of the creation, of Ishvara. And so once the creation projects, then within that projection come all of the Devas. Right? So Brahmaji is the first, because Ishvara. So the first manifestation. And this first is called abhivyakti. It comes into manifestation on its own. In other words, Brahmaji, or Ishvara, is not being born because of prior karmas. Like a jiva, an individual, you've taken this particular birth based upon, because of your prior karmas. Right? So this is a result of prior karmas. Brahmaji or Ishwara is not taking a birth, is not bound by his prior karmas in order causing him to take this birth. So Brahmaji as Ishwara is a manifestation of the creation which is brought about only by himself. There's no predecessor. Right? There's nobody behind him. There's nobody else causing this manifestation. The manifestation is Ishwara himself. See the difference? All of the devas are jivas. They rise to that particular sthana, that particular appointment. You know, that particular appointment within the creation. So the individual jiva takes births depending upon your punya and papa. You'll take birth in different spheres of existence. And the devatas are considered to be exalted jivas who are having at this time an exalted birth. Okay? Brahmaji is not an exalted jiva. Brahmaji is Ishwara. And so there is no punya papa or the accruing of karma in order to bring about this particular sthana. It is Ishwara himself, now manifesting as the creation. So here it says, Brahmaji, Devanam Pratamaha, the first of, among the devas in terms of both guna, in terms of both quality, and in terms of precedence. He was born. And that Brahmaji is, who is Brahmaji? Vishwasya Karta. So Karta means the creator, the maker. Karta, nominative singular. Vishwasya, genitive singular. Vishwasya, of the creation. Karta, the creator of the creation. The word Vishwa also means anything that comes into can be known through a vritti, through a pratyaya, through any type of a vritti, thought modification, that is known is part of the Vishwa. So anything that can be known. That's a word that's used for the entire creation. Everything that can fall into the sphere of being known is the Vishwa. So Vishwasya Karta, the creator, the one who is the creator of this, creating from himself, not from some other material. Right? So that's what we mean by Ishwara. So Brahmaji, who's the Vishwasya Karta, the creator of the whole creation, is also Bhuvanasya Gopta. Once the creation has been created, Bhuvanasya Gopta means the one who is the protector of what has come into being. So Brahmaji is also Vishnu, right? So what we consider, it's a way of showing this is Ishwara. So the one who creates the creation is also the one who sustains the creation. Gopta means nominative singular from Goptra, Gopta. The protector, Bhuvanasya, of that which has come into being. All of the beings that have come into being, the whole creation that has come into being. So the one who sustains that, who holds that, who nourishes that. So that is Brahmaji. So now this is the first verse of the Upanishad. So it's starting out, I want you to just get it visualized this, because we're going to see how this projects, how it progresses. It starts out saying, Ishwara comes into manifestation as Brahmaji. So now, as Brahman, the self, conscious being, pure consciousness, creation manifests as Brahmaji. That's the creation coming into manifestation, and the creation coming into manifestation is a sentient being. And so now here we have Ishwara. And Ishwara is the one who is responsible for the creation and the sustenance. So now here's this Ishwara now has come into being. Infinite mind, if you want to kind of try to visualize what that is, Brahmaji is like an infinite mind in this sense, that the entire manifest creation that has come into being is known. So if you think about what in your experience is like that, well, your mind, any vritti, any thought modification that you have, when that thought modification the thought, only the thought. Forget about the physical world. Forget about sense perception. Just think about the nature of any thought. When that thought comes into manifestation, when it comes into being, that entire thought is known. That thought comes from you, is sustained by you, and resolves back into you. The entire thought is nothing but consciousness, is not away from you. And so when the thought comes into being, that's Brahmaji. When the thought is sustained, that's Vishnu. When the thought is resolved, that's Shiva. Right? But all of that is only you. These are only words to talk about you. So now here, all that is pure consciousness, the conscious being which is Brahman. From Brahman, this entire creation manifests. That's what we call Brahma, Brahmaji. Okay? So from consciousness, this creation comes as the Vishwasikarta. So Brahma becomes the Vishwasikarta, the one that's responsible for the creation. Karta means one who makes, the maker of the Vishwa, okay? Creator. Bhuvanasya Gopta, the one who protects it. Okay? So the one, once the creation has come, the one who's there sustaining it. It's like if you have a vritti in your mind, the vritti comes from you, and you are the one because of whom this vritti maintains itself. When you withdraw it, it's gone. But as long as that vritti that is there, it is there because of you. You're the sustainer of that vritti, thought modification. When you withdraw it, then it's withdrawn back into yourself. That's Shiva or Rudra. Okay? So now, here we have the creation. So what's the next line? Sa Brahma Vidya Saha means he, that Brahmaji. Saha he Brahma Vidyam, the knowledge of Brahma. Brahma Vidyam, that knowledge of Brahman. Sarva Vidya Pratishtam, which is the basis of Sarva Vidya, of all other knowledges. Sarva, all, Vidya, knowledge, so all knowledge, Pratishtam, the basis, the ashraya, the sthana, that which contains and holds, and is the most preeminent also of all other knowledges. So Brahmaji, he taught this Brahmavidyam. Now, Brahmavidyam, the compound, he taught the Vidya. Vidya means knowledge. We can take this in two ways. Shankara takes it in two ways. He taught the knowledge of Brahman, which is how we, when we think of Brahmavidya, when we think of Advaita Vedanta, what is Advaita Vedanta? It's Brahmavidya. It's the knowledge of Brahman. What is Brahman? That which is the absolute reality. That which is the absolute truth of the infinite being is Brahman, the self which is infinite. Okay. So we can take Brahman as Brahman in that way. Or we can say, Brahmaji taught the knowledge of Brahman, his knowledge. His being the firstborn, Brahmaji's knowledge. He taught his knowledge. It's a secondary way of taking it. It would be, but it's kind of odd. It would be like, Johnny taught the knowledge of Johnny. Doesn't it really make sense, you know? You can take it that way because Brahma can be Brahmaji or Brahman. So the primary meaning is this Brahman. So he taught the knowledge of Brahman, not the knowledge that he had, not his own knowledge, but the knowledge of Brahman, I mean of the absolute. He taught that knowledge, which is Sarva Vidya Pratishtam. Now, if you take pratishtha as the ashraya, means the container or the substratum or that which holds, that which contains the very basis of all other knowledges, that's the first way that Shankara takes it. If you take it like that, then you're going to look at it like this. This infinite creation, right? The infinite creation with all of its knowledge, which includes all of the infinite number of pratyas, the infinite number of vrittis, or cognitions, that are available in this creation. All of the knowledge of this creation is dependent on Ishvara, on the projection of Ishvara. Without that projection of Ishvara, right, there is no knowledge. So every knowledge that is there, every understanding, every knowledge, every cognition that is there in the entire creation is totally dependent for its being, right, on Brahman. Right? It's totally dependent for its being on the one from whom it has come. And so in that way, Brahma Vidya, this knowledge of Brahman, is the pratishtha for, is the very basis for all other knowledges. If you take it like that, when you say the knowledge of Brahman, the knowledge of Brahman is equal to Brahman. It's not that the knowledge is over here, this knowledge over here of Brahman over here. This knowledge over here is the pratishtha, the basis for all other knowledges. It doesn't mean that. It means the knowledge of Brahman, that so Brahman itself, right, that knowledge of Brahman, so now that you know that Brahman, it is that Brahman which is the pratishtha, the ashriya, the basis for all knowledge, because all knowledge comes and is sustained by, right, that Brahman. So Brahman is the very being, the very self of all of all knowledges, the very truth of it. Now there's another way of taking it also, that Brahman is the consciousness because of which all knowledge is known. Right? This is known, this is known, this is known, this is known. Nothing is known without consciousness. So in that way, in reality, Brahman itself is the pratishtha. It is the ashriya of all knowledge, and in fact, the experience of knowledge or the experience of consciousness. If when I say, this is known, I have this knowledge, I have this cognition, right? I have this thought is known. This cognition is known. This is what we mean by knowledge, right? I have a cognition of this painting. This painting is known, right? So this subject matter is known. If I can say it, if I can say that this subject matter is known, then I have knowledge of that. These flowers are known. I have knowledge of that. But the knownness, what allows all of these things to be known, is Brahman. The experience of known, this is known, right? This cognition is known. The known experience, which is actually superimposed on all of these objects, that known experience is actually Brahman. So Brahman is the pratishtha. It's the very basis of all knowledge. All knowledge, and I want you to think just experientially what it means for you to have knowledge. Just experientially. It means something is known. Let's just put it really simply. That's your experience. You say you have knowledge. Well, how do you know you have knowledge? Experientially. You say, well, because this thing is known to me. What that means is that this object, this cognition, this memory, this subject matter is hooked up with the experience of known. It is known, it is known, it is known. Who really is responsible for the experience of known? That is Brahman. Brahman is the known experience. And so therefore, Brahman is the pratishtha of sarva vidya, of all vidya, of all knowledge. So this is one of the meanings that Shankara gives here and elaborates on in the Bhashya. Okay? So it's a beautiful meaning, actually. So here he says, Sabrahma vidyam sarva vidya pratishtam. So Brahmaji taught Brahma vidya, which is the very basis of all knowledge. And now a little aside, we'll be getting to this in two verses. The student will ask, Shaunika will ask, can you tell me that knowing which everything else is known? When this one thing is known, then all things are known. That's the sarva vidya pratishtam. If I know this one thing, knowing which all things are known. Okay, so that's the other meaning. Okay. So all of this is in there. In this is very, very rich. Sarva vidya pratishtham. Knowing this, then all things are as well known. Okay. So here, that Brahma vidyam, sarva vidya pratishtham, which is the basis of all knowledges, atharvaya, to Atharva, Jeshtaputraya, his eldest son. Atharva is the name of his son, his proper name, Atharva. Jeshta means eldest, putra, eldest son. Praha, he taught. When you say praha with this word pra in front, he said, he told. But with the pra means he's told very well. Means he told very well means that he told this knowledge, he gave this knowledge without leaving out anything. He passed on this knowledge completely, not partially. Right? And so when we say that praha, that's what's the sense there. He taught completely, thoroughly passed on this knowledge to Atharva, his eldest son. Now, in the Shastra, what do they say about Atharva being the eldest son? What does that mean? Because for Brahmaji, Brahmaji is Ishvara. The creation comes from just pure changeless awareness, cyclically, projects, sustained, resolves, from beginningless process of projecting, sustaining, and resolving. So the creation is cyclical. Now, how this is, Shankara deals with Atharva as the eldest son. At the beginning of one of these many creations, because eldest son means there's more than one son. If you say there's the eldest son, otherwise you'd say the only son, the one and only son. No, he's the eldest son. That means there's other sons. And so when you say the eldest son, then that means at the beginning of the creation, right? At one of the cycles of the creation, at the beginning, the first one, the first manifestation at the beginning of the of one of the creation of the creations, is considered the eldest son. And then, how is Brahmaji going to have a son or a daughter? What is that? And so, how that is viewed is in terms of the sankalpa. So let me explain. I'm going to go back to the vritti again, you having your own vritti. If you were to have you, and you have a vritti, you have a thought modification, you have an imagination. Okay? You are going to be sarvajnaha, all knowledge, the Ishvara, of that imagination. Now, what is in that imagination? Say in that imagination, you have a son. In the imagination. Okay, let me show this just a little bit differently. You have an imagination. The imagination is here. Now, what is in the imagination? Well, okay, in this imagination, there's a sun, and there are clouds. There is the earth, and there are trees, and there is animals, and there are people, and there is this and that, and this and that. All of these things are in the imagination. Okay. What else is in the imagination? Oh, well, there's a hut in the imagination. Okay, there's a hut. Is there anybody in the hut? Well, yes. There's Atharva is in the hut. Atharva is in the hut. Right? And then, what is Atharva doing in the hut? Who is Atharva? Who is Atharva? So Atharva is considered as, you say Brahmaji's eldest son, that's the sankalpa, part of the sankalpa of one of the cycles of creation. And then that Atharva, being one of the first figures in the creation, is considered, taken to be as a rishi, because receives the knowledge of the Vedas from Brahmaji. And so Brahmaji, you have to think of Brahmaji as Ishwara, as all knowledge, as a, really the best way for you to get this experientially again is if you go into your own vritti, you have a vritti, a thought modification. You are a being. You are all knowledge. in reference to that vritti. Okay? You have to circumscribe it, but in reference to that vritti, you are all knowledge. There's a situation happening in the vritti. There is atharva, your first son in the vritti. Atharva has all knowledge, is given all knowledge in terms of the Vedas. So atharva becomes a carrier of the Vedas. That's his blessing through your sankalpa. So you say the whole infinite creation, this is how they envision it anyway. Who knows? This is how they envision it. Atharva, through Brahmaji's sankalpa, becomes the first son. And to that first son, Brahmaji gives the entire Vedas. And so this is the start of the sampradaya. So that means in this story, the sampradaya, in the way that this is told and related, what you get so far is that the knowledge itself of the Vedas, of the Brahma Vidya, comes from Ishwara himself, and it is passed to his son, Atharva, who would be considered the first rishi. So this right here, from this movement right here, we have the sampradaya, beginning of the sampradaya. And so from Brahmaji now, he teaches praha, this entire Brahmavidya, to Atharva. Okay? So now let's go to the next verse and see what happens. Okay. Atharva neyam. Atharvaneyam pravadeta brahma. Atharvatam.
Atharvatam.
Parovachangire.
Parovachangire.
Brahmavidyam.
Brahmavidyam.
Sabhadadvajaya.
Sabhadadvajaya.
Satyavahaya praha.
Satyavahaya praha.
Bharadvajo,
Bharadvajo,
Angirase Paravaram,
Angirase Paravaram.
Now he says, Atharvane. In the first verse, they use the word Atharva. In the second verse, they're using Atharvan. They're referring to the same person, but just two different forms of the word. So Atharvane is in the dative singular of an in-ending noun. So, Atharvane, to Atharvana, yam. That which pravadeta, which was clearly taught, pravadet is the meaning here, pravadeta, that which was taught, Brahma, that which Brahmaji, pravadeta, taught to Atharva. Atharvane, yam, pravadeta, Brahma. So, that which Brahmaji taught to Atharvana, Atharva, tam, Atharva, tam, that, pura, formerly, so first, that pura should go up to the top, first, in the beginning, that which was taught, by that which was taught, that which Brahmaji taught to Atharva, Atharva, tam, that, uvacha, told to Angir, Angire, again, data, that knowledge, that tam brahmavidyam, that brahmavidya, Atharva taught to Angire. To Angir. Angire is in the data. Then, he, sa, bharadvajaya satyavahaya praha. Angir, he taught it, praha, sahat praha. He taught it to Bharadvaja. Bharadvaja, the name of Bharadvaja is Satyavaha. Satyavaha means, it's a proper name, Satyavaha means one who carries the truth, a truth bearer, one who only tells the truth, Satyavaha. So, Satyavaha is another name for him is Bharadvaja, that's a patronymic. He is from the house of Bharadvaja, that's his father. So, Satyavaha is his name. The Satyavaha is the name of the person. What does it mean? The one who tells the truth. It's the truth who bears, always tells the truth. He is from the family of Bharadvaja. Bharadvaja means from the family of Bharadvaja. So now what do we have? The knowledge which Brahma taught to Atharva. Atharva taught to Angira. He taught that same Brahma Vidya to Angira. Now, Angir, he taught that same Brahmavidya to Satyavaha. Okay? And then, Bharadwajaha Angirase Paravaram. Then Bharadwaja, who is Satyavaha, he taught it to Angiras. You see that? He taught it to Angiras. Angirase. Paravaram. He taught the Paravaram to Angiras. Paravaram has two meanings. First, if you take it adverbially, he taught the Brahmavidyam, which is Paravaram. It means that which the first taught to the what came before, the one who came before taught to the one who came after. It's a word for the sampradaya. This knowledge that has gone from teacher to student. Para is the teacher, apara is the student. Right? First, the first is the para, then the apara is the latter. So avara, para, avara, para, avara. So paravaram, the sampradaya between teacher, student, teacher, student, teacher, student. So this Brahmavidyam that has been handed down from Brahmaji, right, to Atharva, to Angir, to Satyavaha, to Angiras. Now this sampradaya has been established, right? So each one taught the other this Brahmavidyam, paravara, totally. So paravara also means like lighting the idea of lighting a candle, right? One candle flame is used to light the next candle flame, which lights the next candle flame. That's the passing on the knowledge completely, so that the knowledge that Brahmaji had, now Angirasa has in the same way. Nothing has been lost. You know, otherwise they, like if the knowledge isn't passed on completely, they liken it, you know, to that telephone game. You know, and it never comes out the same. Whoever gets it, the last person to get it has got some other thing, other meaning there. The knowledge has not been passed on. Here, the knowledge has to be passed on in total. Swamiji, I read in his commentary, he talks about this, and I noted it because when I was looking at his commentary, it's wow, he has said this many times in the courses that I've taken from him, the classes I've taken. In this, the sampradaya between gurus and sisha, this knowledge, there's a tremendous value and importance that the teacher pass on the whole of the knowledge without leaving anything out. It's been known that stories have been told, like for instance, a dancer who may be a wonderful dancer, but her student has a little more capacity, better body, a little bit more flexible. And so the teacher, in order to maintain her prestige, doesn't teach quite everything, doesn't pass the whole of the knowledge. Another example that Swamiji has often used, this is really a good one, cooking. A chef, right? A wonderful chef, teaches her students the recipes, all except for one or two little ingredients, you know. Yeah. Holding something back. And so that's actually considered a great papa. And a person who, a teacher who does that, who doesn't impart all of the knowledge that they have, is reborn, according to tradition, as a Brahma Rakshasa, you know, as a ghost, right? As a ghost. Because they, and lurking around, you know, because they didn't give everything. So Swamiji kind of will laugh about that, but what the point he's making is to look at the value. And now, in this text, it starts out with Brahmaji teaching his child. When you teach your child, you're not going to selfishly hold out, hopefully. You know, you hopefully, the parent, because of the tremendous love for the child, will want to pass on absolutely everything. And so in the sampradaya, the teacher, here in Brahma Vidya, right? In Brahma Vidya, the teacher has to pass on everything, but it's not just true for Brahma Vidya. It's a tradition where the entirety of your knowledge has to be given, all of it. You don't hold anything back. And that's a tremendous value that is held in India. And so it's also a responsibility in a sense for somebody who has been graced with knowledge, something that blesses you, then it's natural to want to pass that on. But in India, that natural urge to pass it on is given, there's a tremendous value for it. And there's a tremendous value for also passing it on completely. And if you don't, there's a papa there. Like, just to show you how strong it is. So. Now there's another meaning here for this paravaram. Para and avara is more commonly known as para and apara, where paravidya, which we'll see a little later on, probably not today, but paravidya is the vidya, knowledge of Brahman. Paravidya is Brahmavidya, the knowledge of the higher. Knowledge of that which is the cause of everything. Aparavidya or avaravidya is everything else. So the whole saguna Brahman, everything that exists within the creation, everything that exists within duality, even whether it be all of the Vedas, you know, all of the different knowledges, everything that can be learned within duality is avara, because it's limited, right? It doesn't give knowledge of the whole. So you have paravidya, that which is knowledge of the whole, knowledge of Brahman, and aparavidya or avaravidya, which is knowledge of everything else. It's not to diminish everything else, but it's just that everything else is this sarva vidya pratishtan. It has Brahman, it has the self for its adhishtana, for its basis. So when we look at all the knowledge that there is to be had, there's the avara vidya, which is all the vidya within duality, or everything that exists, and paravidya, which is knowledge of the whole. And so here we can take para avaram, paravaram, as an adjective to Brahmavidya. So that Brahmavidya, which is inclusive of knowledge of the whole and knowledge of the mitya, satyam and mitya. But more in the context is this paravaram. Both actually, the paravaram as paravidya and aparavidya comes a little bit later. This paravaram is the sampradaya, the tradition of the teaching, is looking backwards. Okay, so both work really, really beautifully. Okay, so let's look at the next one here. Shaunako havai mahashalaha. Shaunako havai mahashalaha. Angirasam.
Angirasam.
Vidivat. Upasannaha papraccha. Kasminnu. Bhagavo vignyate. Sarvamidam. Vignyatam. Bhavatiti. Shaunako havai mahashalaha. Angirasam vidivat upasanna papraccha kasminnu bhagavo vignyate sarvamidam vignyatam bhavati ti. We are left here with Bharadwaja, whose name is Satyavaha, passing this on, teaching praha, teaching Angiras. Okay, that's the previous verse. Taught it to Angiras. Now it says, Shaunakaha, that's the name of the person, Havai, he indeed, Havai, just emphasis, Mahashalaha, Shaunaka, who was a Mahashalaha, a great householder. I'll talk about what that means in a minute. He was a householder. Mahashalaha, a great renowned householder, Mahashalaha Grihastha. Angirasam, to Angirasam, accusative. Shaunakaha in Mahashalaha are nominative singulars. So Shaunakaha, Mahashalaha, Angirasam, accusative singular. Okay. Vidivat, according to Viddi. Vidivat means according to Viddi, according to, as duly enjoined. Viddi means, the Viddi is the injunction. There's a proper way to do things. So Vidivat means properly, according to Viddi, as enjoined, following the rules properly. Shaunaka Upasanna, he approached, according, following the Viddi, Angirasam. Okay, Angiras. He approached Angiras. And having approached Upasannaha, having approached, according to Viddi, Angiras, Papracha, he asked Angiras. What did he ask? Kasminu Bhagavaha Vignate Sarvamidam Vignatam Bhavati Iti. He says, hey Bhagavan, Bhagavaha is in the vocative. Hey Bhagavan. When what is known, kasminu vignate, when what thing is known, when what is known, vignate is known, sarvamidam, all of this, vignatam bhavati. When this is known, when what is that? That kasmin is an interrogative. When this thing is known, when this one thing is known, everything else is known. Sarvam idam vignatam bhavati. Sarvam all, idam this, vignatam is known. Bhavati means is. So when this is known, all this is known. What is that? What is that one thing? That is his question. So he's approached, now there's some important things here. He approaches Angiras, following Viddi, according to Viddi, that upasannaha means when you approach your teacher as a guru. And there are ways to do that. There's as what we'll see later in this Upanishad, with sticks in hand, they go to the teacher, prostrate, and then ask the teacher, please, Bhagavan, please teach me, with sticks in hand. With sticks in hand, summit panihi, because the student would go to the guru, you know, and it was symbolic of, I will make the fires for you, I will make your fires, I will clean your, I will take care of your home and your gardens, I'll do service to you. You know, I'll do all of these things of service to you if you would please accept me as your student. And so there's a traditional way of approaching the teacher. There's a traditional attitude of approaching the teacher. So I remember when that attitude and that summit panihi, going to the teacher with his symbolic sticks in hand, didn't used to be symbolic, now it's symbolic, sticks in hand. Hari, who is a very, very well-known teacher in Madras now, Swami Prakashananda, I guess his name is, a very highly respected sannyasi teaching in Chennai now. He's Swamiji's student. He came to, he was a traditionally brought up, he was brought up with Vedic, and he knew all of the Vedas and everything before when he came to Swamiji. He was only 16 or 17 when he came. And he had been taught in a Veda Shala and all of these. And so he'd been brought up very traditionally. So when he knew Swamiji was going to be starting to sit for 3 years to teach a three-year course, he came to Swamiji with sticks in hand, with a simit pani, and gave his prostrations and so many things he said in the Sanskrit, you know, asking, you know, to be accepted as Swamiji's student. And, you know, I mean, he just did it. It was such a beautiful thing to see because he was just following kind of a Vedic tradition there that Swamiji was also familiar with. But there's a certain attitude there. So here it says, here Shaunaka approached Angirasam according to Vidhi. So now that is now become part of the Sampradaya. He's approached to gain this teaching according to Vidhi. So Shankara talks about that a little bit in the Bhasha. Swamiji also talks about it in his commentary. Then the question is that Shankara brings up, is this the landmark or the demarcation up till now from Brahmaji up to Shaunaka, you know, there was no Vidhi mentioned. So does that Vidhi start just here? From this point on in the tradition, there's that this Vidhi is being followed, you know. Is that what is meant, where there's a demarcation? Or should we take it kind of by the nyaya of, there's a nyaya that says, you know, when you put a lamp, say if you take a lamp and you put it on the doorstep right here at the entryway, that lamp shines outside and inside. See what I mean? If I put a lamp right at the entryway, right, then the outside is getting lit and the inside. And so like that, when you say the Vidhivat, does that Vidhi shine backwards as well as forwards? Okay. Because Shankara says, because this is a tradition that even to this day we follow. Right? The guru is approached traditionally with a certain type of respect and humility and with sticks in hand. There's a certain way of approaching the teacher, and we follow that way of approaching the teacher even today. And so we can take it as not that it's only now, you know, three or four steps into the Sampradaya that this is starting. It's just that being mentioned, it's being mentioned here because it's now being mentioned here because this Upanishad, the actual teaching, is starting now between Shaunaka and Angiras. Angiras is going to teach Shaunaka. Until this point, until this verse, all the other verses have just been showing the Sampradaya. See that? Up until now, up until this verse, it's just been a praise of the Sampradaya. That this knowledge, really to tell the student, this knowledge has started from Ishvara. Right? This knowledge is not starting from a human being. The knowledge has come down from Ishvara. Right? And now, the knowledge went from Ishvara to Atharva to Sativa to Angiras, like that. And then now to Shaunaka. So it's showing, it's making the student appreciate the origins of the knowledge are what we call apaurusheya. This knowledge is not coming just out of a human's mind. This knowledge is something that comes with the creation, cyclically, every creation. So up until this point, all of these verses are just meant to tell you that this knowledge is something that comes from Bhagawan himself. Right? But now, the teaching is starting. Now what's happened is Shaunaka is approaching Angirasam and asking him to teach him and saying, what is that? Knowing which everything is as well known. So now the teaching has started, and this Mundaka Upanishad is a dialogue now between Shaunaka and Angiras. You see? Okay, so the teaching is now, since the teaching is now starting, we're getting more detailed. So he approached according to Vidhi, following the traditions of the guru-sisha relationship, and with all respect, he approaches. And then he asked this question. I'll tell you one thing about this question, then we'll spend next part of next week on it. I'll tell you an interesting argument that Shankara brings up about this question. This is somebody comes up with this argument and says, how can you, if you don't know something, how can you ask a question like this? You know, say, how can you even say knowing which one thing if I know which is that one thing that I can know, knowing which all else will be known. What is that thing? Would you tell me that? You say, no, that's not a proper question. You should say, is there such a thing? Is there such a thing that if I know that? So what is that thing? Is there such a thing? But he's not saying that. He's saying, what is the that thing, knowing which all things are known, please teach me that. Knowing which all things are known, that thing, knowing which all things are known, what is that? Please teach me that. So there's a great assumption there, right, that there's such a thing. That's not proper. He says that, so that this is the questioner, and the one who brings up this question. And he says, you should say, well, is there such a thing? And then he gives another example. Like, for instance, say there are many pots. Right? You could say, of all of the pots, in which one of these should I put the milk? Right? In which one should I put the milk? But I know, here they all are. Right? I just don't know which one to put it in. So here are a bunch of knowledges here. In which one of these, which one of these knowledge should I know to know all of these? That I'm picking one out of the group. And that would make sense. But we know that that's not going to be the case, because not one thing, one objective knowledge is not going to be, it's not going to be possible, right? That one objective knowledge would be knowledge of all things. So that's not possible. So how can this such a question be even asked? What is the idea? And so he gives a couple of answers. One is, Shaunaka is a Mahashala. Means that he's a householder who has been brought up Vedically, has done all of the rituals, and has studied all of the Vedas, which would include the Upanishad. So he knows all of this content. He studied all of the Vedas. He studied the Upanishads are part of the Vedas. He's read all of that. In all of the Upanishads, the Chandogya and this Upanishad, and all of the Upanishads, that they say this. You knowing which, what thing, everything is well known. So he knows this phrase, and all the Upanishads talk about it. He just doesn't know what it is. Right? And so from what he's heard from the wise, he knows there is such a thing. And knowing that, then he brings that question. And another thing it can be to make this question meaningful is if you're thinking, you know, just like all bangles, all different bangles and jewelry are made from gold. There, all of these different things have only one thing as their truth, which is gold. Like that, just in a worldly logic, is there anything like that? Is there one thing from which all other things have come? And then the questioner can say, yeah, but he can't. He's not saying enough words. You know, he started out by saying, when this is known, then all other things are known. How could he even mean that? And Shankara says, he doesn't want to waste words. He doesn't want to waste words. What he means is obvious there. What he means is obvious. So even if we take it in this laukika way, in this golden bangles, it's obvious. You know, he doesn't have to explain all of this. He says, when this one thing is known, then all things are known. Is there such a thing? That's all he means to say. Otherwise, you're getting too many words. Don't argue like this. Okay, so we'll stop there. There's a lot to say about this Mahashala and the statement. So, about this type of knowledge. So we'll do that next week. Let's just take a minute. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, that this Upanishad very directly addresses the question of where did the Upanishad come from? Where was the start of the parampara? And in questions like, you know, rebirth or prior lives, I feel like it is not quite as important, you know, it's a matter of you wouldn't know one way or the other. So yes, it's part of the Shruti, and you know, believe it. But it doesn't seem so crucial to understanding whether or not you believe it. However, in terms, you know, I've always had the question of here is the Upanishads, you know, it's very real, and when you base your life on it, where did they really come from? And just the way that you cannot know, you know, whether you had a prior life or whether you don't have a next life, really you cannot know where they came from. And I'm wondering how, you know, then it seems a little more important when you hear really that Ishvara's son was, you know, Atharva, and then it came from Atharva. It seems like you can't quite, in my mind, I feel like I can't put it aside the same way that I can put the matters of other matters of faith aside. Like, I can put matter of rebirth aside. But here, you know, the Upanishad is very real, and we are studying it. So where did they come from? And they themselves are saying, well, I came from Ishvara in this way. How literally do you take that?
I take, well, for instance, if you go into the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 3, Krishna does that. He takes it back to Ishvara with a different lineage of different rishis. But the point is that he takes it back to Ishvara. Here the point is, to me, it's not that it's Atharva or who the actual people are, but it's that the Upanishad takes it back to Ishvara. Means that the statement of the Upanishad itself is that this knowledge comes from Ishvara, that this knowledge is a revealed knowledge. Okay, so now, okay, so I'm going to take that a little bit farther. Do you want to ask a question first?
No, I was just thinking, and I was trying to relate it to evolution in my mind and decide that, you know, there is evolution. Well, let's say, you know, there is enough scientific basis for evolution. So who was this first person who was this first rishi who this knowledge was revealed to? Just kind of trying to tie it to that concept.
Well, you know, I don't think evolution or anything like that gets in the way at all, because evolution can't take you back to the first cause. Evolution didn't create the creation.
Mm-hmm.
The creation is created. And then within the creation, once the time, space, all of the elements are there, then there's going to be a process of change that goes on according to the laws that allow for whatever the realities are that we call evolution and change, whatever that is, and we go on in science, discovering all of the laws that are involved around it, slowly, slowly, uncovering, discovering. Okay, but that makes no comment whatsoever on first causes. Okay, it also doesn't make a comment on the human being, the existence of the human being archetypally. Now, what I mean by that archetypally, here's the human being. Now we know what a human being is, right? Did this human being come about through a process of slow evolution, which for us, of course, is when we look back through eons of time, you know, it's a slow process, and here's the human being. And so we say, well, you know, the human being seems to have evolved very, very slowly over millions of years. From Bhagavan's standpoint, it doesn't matter if it's 1 second or millions of years. Human being is human being. Right? This human being, you know, that we're calling Atharva, received this knowledge from Brahmaji. So what all that's being said is that this rishi received this revealed knowledge from Ishvara. What is the point? The point is he didn't receive it, that this knowledge cannot be conjured up by a human intellect. There is no means of knowledge available to you in terms of your sense perception, your everything based inference and presumption based on sense perception. You cannot get to this knowledge. You can't arrive at it. And so it's not something, a knowledge that has come into being as a means of knowledge through your human capacity. And so the Shruti acknowledges that this knowledge has not come about through human capacity. This knowledge comes about as given, comes with the creation through Ishvara. Now, this is myth. You can say, oh, this is just mythological. It came from Brahmaji to Atharva to, you know, Shanaka, whatever. That's okay. But what you need to understand is that it's considered a revealed knowledge. Why it's considered a revealed knowledge? What can you know? And what are your sense organs capable of knowing, and what aren't they? Okay, so there's that whole world of epistemology, which is important to get into, to thoroughly understand. But then, with any pramana, with any means of knowledge, whether it's your eyes, your ears, inference, presumption, any of them, in order for you to know whether it is a means of knowledge, it has to be employed. That's a means of knowledge. In order for you to know if it's a means of knowledge, it has to be employed. And then if it is employed, what does it give in order to convince you that it is a means of knowledge, and then what has to happen in your mind, etc. So all of this is something that has to be understood. Like, what does it mean for the mind to use a means of knowledge, and how do you know whether that knowledge is accurate or not, that there's a fruit to that knowledge? Right, so all of this has to be looked into. And then, so then the question is, does this pramana and the Upanishad itself presents itself, as you can see, here it is. It presents itself as a very sacred teaching, as a pramana, you know, that gives Brahmavidya. Here, you couldn't have it more definite, you know. So then the question is, does this Brahmavidya, is there such a knowledge? Does that Brahmavidya take place? Is there such a knowledge? Is there something for me to see, to know, that is new knowledge, that has an effect, that has a result, right? It causes a change in me. You know, so there's a lot to understand there.
So it seems like that almost, it seems that the only relevant question, maybe the question of, you know, prior births or whatever, and even the question of the origination of the Upanishads and everything that we've done today, takes sort of second place to whether, you know, the pramana is real and it works, and that's what.
Well, that's right. You know, and then, but then, I would say, I would add this. As the pramana works, say you're exposed to the pramana, and it works for you, and you see, right? You see, and you experience the results of that seeing, what that means to you. Then, as you study the Upanishads with the Shraddha, that Shraddha means that it's sacred to you, and you have a Shraddha that it is true. There's a Shraddha there that the Upanishad is something sacred, and that it is true, and that it has something to give me, you know, until proven otherwise, right? When I say that it is true, I don't mean that it's some kind of a blind belief. I mean that it's an attitude that gives me the Shraddha that would allow me to study it, as opposed to an attitude that says, oh, this is so ridiculous. Why would I study it? Right? So if I have that Shraddha, then as the blessing of the Upanishads, with the Upanishad, if the Upanishad blesses me, then I take more seriously and more seriously what it has to say. And then I try to understand when I see it's talking about this knowledge as revealed as coming from Brahmaji. You know, in the whole scheme of things, it makes complete sense, because Ishvara is an infinite conscious being, an infinite mind, which is my own self. Why shouldn't this knowledge be there? Why shouldn't this knowledge be part and parcel of the whole. You know? If Ishvara is Sarvajna and Sarvavit, all knowledge, and it is really a projection of myself, my own being, then it makes so much sense to me that just like there would be water and food and air, all of these things that allow the survival of the jiva, you know, where the jiva goes together with the environment. You know, you have lungs, and so there's air. You need water to survive, and so there's water. There's a relationship. And you have a desire as a human being to be whole, to be full, to be complete. It's not that just one weirdo has that desire. Everybody does. And it seems to think that that would not be able to be a universal desire would have no fulfillment, you know, seems horrible to me. Or to even think that I would not be able to know who I am. I would not be able to know what reality is. Why would that have to be that way? Unless there's just an inert creation. So to me, it all makes sense.
I'm
Kristen, and then I'll do you. Jeff.
This question reminded me that a similar question arose in my mind when I was listening to it, and I wondered if that sort of anthropomorphic interpretation is the only way of interpreting how this knowledge first came, you know, into being. Sort of Brahmaji is given this sort of personhood, as is Vishnu. I wonder if, you know, when you say that this knowledge didn't come into existence through a human being, it's coming in, I was thinking this knowledge is a, you know, cognition, and so the first, I was wondering if one could understand the rishis as the first manifestation of that cognition.
Yeah, in a sense, it came. There are even verses that say it came through the mind of the rishis like breath. As easy as breathing, so in that way. And when Brahmaji is not looked at as not being anthropomorphized, I was trying to actually break through that. When we see Ishvara like the first manifestation, we call that Brahmaji. But it's because it's a whole infinite creation is conscious. But it's not an anthropomorphized being, even though there'll be so many pictures and things of Brahmaji and Vishnu and myths and stories. That's right, that's nice. That's a nice way to say it. Yeah. Jeff?
And because the Sampradaya is passed down in its entirety from gurus to gurus, it's actually Brahmaji that is in fact teaching everybody at any given moment, even now at this particular time.
Well, you can say it like that because the knowledge is the same, right? And the knowledge is part of this creation has been passed down. Yeah.
This word, in the first mantra, the word pratishtam, that's so, talk about that as foundation.
Foundation or ashraya. Ashraya means the basis or that which contains or holds something. That's one of the meanings. Pratishtha can also mean that which is most the preeminent. Among all the knowledges, that which is the preeminent is also the pratishtha. So Shankara takes both two or three different meanings there. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you say earlier that it was not possible to understand or realize this teaching without somebody teaching it? As a human being, if I'd never heard these teachings, I would not be able to understand this knowledge. Is that what you're saying?
I've talked not quite in that way, but I don't recall saying that tonight. So I'm just trying to think back what I actually was talking about.
And you were answering Kiki.
Yeah.
Oh, in reference to Kiki?
Yeah, it was something about we have like all the senses that we're given.
Oh, I see.
The way we can know that.
Yes, okay. Let me explain that. Yourself is already experientially present for everybody. So everybody has the self-experience, self-knowledge in a way. It's what we call samanya jnana, general knowledge. I am, I exist. You have that experience? Everybody. You know, but you don't have a means of knowledge to know what the nature of that existence is. Your eyes can only give you knowledge of color, of form. Your ears, of sound. All of your sense organs are only capable of giving you knowledge of things within duality. And even inference and presumption are based upon relationships between objects and concepts within duality. Okay? And indirect knowledge, like knowledge you get through the use of words, like if I describe, for instance, China to you or something like that, that's an indirect knowledge. That's all based on sense perception. So even though you have the self-experience of yourself as an awareful being, you have no means of knowledge to know what the nature of that awareness is. Nor does any human being have any means of knowledge to know what is the cause of this creation, from what does this creation come. You can't get to what is prior to duality. You have no means of knowledge for that. And so if you can guess and, you know, be poetic, it could be all kinds of things, be intuitive, but all, none of that is based on knowledge, right? So you don't have available to you a means of knowledge for that. That's why it requires revealed knowledge, a revealed means of knowledge. That's what I was saying. Does that make sense?
I was wondering if, you know, when you talk about Vidhi Bhatt, that he already had some, you know, that there was already
according to Vidhi,
the quorum that he knew.
Yeah.
If that implied that he, you know, already had familiarity with the Karmakanda Vedas and then...
Absolutely. And even with the Upanishads. They studied the whole Veda. But then you can read the Vedas and study the Vedas and know how to do all of it, learn how to do the rituals and read and memorize all of the Upanishads, but the Upanishads need to be taught according to the Sampradaya in order for them to reveal the knowledge. Otherwise, you just know, you study all the Upanishads and you realize, this knowledge is there. I need to go to a teacher so that I can get this. So here, Shanaka goes to the teacher and says, what is that? You know, that what is that thing? Knowing which all things are known. The Chandogya, the Taittiriya, the Mundaka itself, use that language. What is that? Knowing which all things are known.
So he must have been informed or familiar with this.
Exactly. That's what Shankara says. So Shankara.
That's sort of circular because, I mean, we're talking about the Mandaka, the Upanishads, and you're saying he already read the Upanishad, and if this is what is being recorded, what does that mean?
Well, actually, with Shankara, he's quite a number removed, right? But yeah, it's circular.
Maybe
it's circular.
The first,
yeah.
Disciple.
Yeah. But also, there's no first creation. I think, you know, it's. If you try to make. I wouldn't. You know what? No, I don't make it. I don't make it literal, and I don't make it not literal either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I experience what. I experience what it is. I just experience what the Upanishad has to say. You know, and there's a message in that Upanishad. My mind doesn't go, did Atharva, was he really a person or not? You know, I think that's problematic.
Yeah.
Because, you know why? There's no way to know that. And so what you need to know is whether or not what it's saying, what is what we call the tatparya? What is being conveyed to you here? What do they want you to understand?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And otherwise you get yourself into trouble.
So you listen to the story.
You listen to the story, And but understand, you try to see what's being revealed there.
But and you really can't take it literally then, right? I mean, because really, it just seems like, and that's the thing. I mean, that's what it's trying to compare it, you know, prior lives or past lives or, you know, future lives. It just seems like, you know,
I'll tell you what.
I feel
that the question is wrong. To take it, do I have to take this real or not take it real? This dyad is the wrong dyad. You know, it's not what it's about. Yeah. Yeah. Is this true? Did this really happen or did it not really happen? It's not about that. There's a vision that's being, an understanding that's being held there. You know? All of these questions, they don't apply. And so here, what applies here is that the Vedas are revealed knowledge, that Brahma, that Ishvara, is a conscious being. That's what applies. That the Vedas are revealed knowledge. That's what they are saying. That they come, and that the Vedas come from Ishvara. That's what the Shruti wants you to understand.
But why doesn't the Shruti say that? Then why does it give names?
Because the Sampradaya is so important. Because for us, this teaching has been handed down from teacher to student, teacher to student, teacher to student. There's a Sampradaya. And that Sampradaya is very, very important. You know, it's not taken lightly. The Guru-Sisha relationship is the most sacred relationship in India. And the student always approaches the teacher with such reverence. I mean, we're teaching this knowledge here in a culture that doesn't know this type of reverence. Doesn't know that there's nothing more sacred than this knowledge. That there's nothing more sacred than the Guru-Sisha relationship. This culture doesn't know that. In India, the culture knows that. And so a lot of what is held within the culture that is holding all of the people, right? There's a culture that's holding all of the people. We here in the West, we have a culture that is holding all the people, right? A scientific culture, a culture with science and evolution and math and all these things. That's the culture that's holding the people. It's not a mythological culture. It's not a culture that has to do with images or the subtle world or anything like that. Or it's not a really religious culture. It's not a religious culture where all of the myths and all of the stories are what is holding the person's psyche. You know, it's a different type of culture. And so when we transplant this knowledge here, that is one of the difficulties. But it's just a difficulty. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't have access to these Upanishads, or that we shouldn't try to understand. You know, it just means that we have to understand who we are, the ones who are hearing this knowledge.
So you're saying in that Indian culture, there's almost a shraddha that's there about the mythology that allows them, unlike us, myself included, when I hear the sampradaya, I was like, okay, well, who came first? Who started it? And that's why I got a little caught up here. Well, he's talking about the Upanishads, but this isn't a Upanishad.
Shankar is the one who said that it wasn't the Upanishad.
Yeah, Shankar's saying all that, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the commentary saying that. But
the Upanishad itself said that he approached him with the
Prakha. With this question, as if he had already read the Upanishad.
Yeah.
And so that's where I got a little confused.
Oh, I see. But yeah. But there's lots of Upanishads and there's lots of teaching, right? So this teaching has been going on. There's many, many different Upanishads.
Right.
There's many teacher-student relationship and all of that type of thing. But I understand what you're saying.
Because I guess what I'm saying is maybe an Indian student wouldn't get lost in that, kind of trying to figure that out.
No, they would. They would. That's why Shankara deals with all of it. But you'll get lost and have, you have your you'll get lost and you have your set of doubts that are kind of based upon what your belief structure is in your psyche.
Right.
You know?
Early on the course, yeah.
Not to be politically correct, but there is only one truth. And could you not say that all the different religions are, maybe they're saying it wrong, but they're all struggling to find that one truth?
Well, that's right. And there is only, say there's only one truth. One truth means there's only one creation. What is. That's when you say. Well, if you say, that's what I mean. If you say there's only one truth, it's not there's only one truth and it's mine. That's not what I mean by that. It means there is what is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what is is.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever is, all of us are part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so what all the philosophies are describing, what all of the religions are describing, are that one thing that is. And they may be going off here and there or describing it in a different way, but they are still describing the experience, which is our shared experience. We all are enjoying this creation. We all have a body. We all have a mind. We all have moods. We all have emotions. We all have sense organs. We all have different levels of spiritual experiences that we can call either psychotic breaks or you know, religious visions or breakthroughs. Psychotic breaks or breakthroughs. But we're still dealing with our experience here.
Well, that's what I like about Swamiji when he says that instead of saying there's only one God, when you switch around, there's only God.
Yeah. That's so profound.
It's huge.
There is only God. And then there are countless infinite ways to worship that God. And in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, in whatever way you worship me, in that way I receive you.